When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornborough, and I'm joined today by Rachel Hester, and we're going to talk about something I don't think we've ever talked about on this podcast before, and that's dairy sheep. How are you doing, Rachel?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to have you on today, and this is a new topic for me because, you know, talk about sheep sometimes. We talk about goats. We talk about cows. We talk about things, but I don't think we ever specifically talked about dairy sheep. And I definitely want to hear how you got into focused on that. But before we get into that, even just I'd like to hear your story about what got you into homesteading in the first place.
Sure. Well, my husband's grandpa has a farm in Alabama. He has about 40 acres. He has baldy cows. So Kyle grew up going to grandpa's farm and working cows. So he always wanted to have a small acreage with some cows like Pap. And my homestead in South Dakota for a very short amount of time, it was not an enjoyable experience. And I was like, I'm never doing agriculture again. So when we got married, my husband was like, well, we're going to have a delightful little farm. And I was like, okay, I'm trusting you. But I didn't want to do row crops or a typical farm per se. I was like, if we're going to do this, it has to be pretty. It has to look nice. I mean, we can't have brown chickens. We need parakeet chickens or whatever. And we were really planning on this not happening until he was retired and this was like our hobby type thing. But he donated some bone marrow right after we were married and it actually destroyed his health. So very long story short, I ended up going to school for nutritional therapy just so I would know how to support his health. And in the process of that, I learned about, our broken food supply and sourcing your food and, the importance of how your meat and your vegetables are raised and how that affects our health on a daily basis. I learned about Joel Salatin for the first time. So I went and checked some of his books out of our local library. And I remember the night I said to my husband, you got to listen to this. And I read him an excerpt out of The Sheer Ecstasy of Being a Lunatic Farmer. And Kyle looked at me and he's like, could farm like that? And I said, yeah, I wouldn't mind doing it like this. I mean, he talks about earthworms dancing. I can get behind earthworms dancing. So we've been talking about getting our first house at that point. And he's like, well, we'll just get like an acre or two. And we'll just, get a couple chickens and you can have a big garden and we'll go from there. And we ended up getting a foreclosure with 8.5 acres. And, we got the entry-level drug livestock chickens and then I added some ducks because I like cooking with duck eggs. And then we had to have guard geese because vultures kept getting our ducks and chickens and we had some beehives. And then we're looking at goats because if you homestead, you get goats. I don't know why, you just do. But that was in 2020.
You get them and then they get out and then you change your mind. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. it's like that's level two with the homesteading world. It's level one is the chickens and level two is the goats. It seems like how it goes. And then level three is you get rid of the goats and you try something else. But our starter flock ended up dissolving into the ether with all the lockdowns in 2020. So when other people were panic buying toilet paper and spaghetti noodles, I went and panic bought two sheep because we're in Kentucky and everyone deer hunts. And I was like, well, we've got eggs. We've got Amish friends who love us. So surely they'll keep giving us milk, but we don't have red meat. So if we get sheep, then have meat, we could get milk if we need to from them, and we'll have yarn, we'll have wool, and I knit, so we'll have clothing. So I mean, I'm looking at the rationale, probably wasn't the best in the world, but it was 2020. We were all panicking. So we got these two sheep and we had them for a couple of months. And my husband was like, you know, I think I like sheep better than I think I'd like goats. And that was fine with me because like I said, I spin and I knit and I was like, okay, well, I'll get some more sheep. So by the end of the year, we had 8 sheep and we bred all of them. And that spring I started milking all of them. And I mean, they weren't, some of them were dairy breeds, but most of them were non-dairy breeds, just because we didn't have access to the ones you're quote supposed to milk. Mm-hmm. And so we just started milking them that spring. And, you know, we noticed that some of the sheep had more butter fat and some had less butter fat, but larger content. And some were more cooperative to be milked. Some others were less cooperative to be milked. But I mean, at the end of the day, we got milk from all of them. And I didn't think I was doing anything super special. I was just, you know, stuck at home and bored and wanted milk. And as I started talking to people and telling them what I was doing, they were like, that's really cool. Okay. You know, who told you you could do this? And I was like, well, I mean, when I was on the mission field in Eastern Europe, they just always had sheep milk cheese. And I figured you had to have a sheep to have sheep milk to have sheep milk cheese. So I figured I'd try it. And apparently that's a popular life choice on my part. So, yeah, so, that's kind of the progression of events.
Yeah. So, well, anyway, you've written a book on the guide to homestead dairy sheep. So you know quite a bit about it. You've been doing it now. You've really dove into it. It's something you're really, you're into now. Really big. So you had all these sheep, which ones were actually considered dairy sheep and which ones aren't?
So the main dairy breeds are East Frisian, Awassee, Clun Forest, Asaph, Lacone, and those are the genetics pretty much available in the United States. Okay. And then if you go into Canada, they've got British milk sheep as well. And then, you know, if you go into Europe, there's a ton more breeds. So they're considered dairy breeds because their lactation is longer. Their disposition is much more friendly to humans. They have larger udders. They have longer teats. They don't dry up their milk as quickly when you take the lambs off of them. Okay. So they're just more, you know, it's kind of like the difference between an Angus cow and a Jersey cow. Like they just have been kind of bred for different things. But I mean, you can milk an Angus cow. It just, you may not enjoy the experience as much as if you milked a Jersey. So, so then the other breeds I have are more wool breeds. So, with a dairy sheep, they'll put, when they eat protein, they tend to put that protein into their milk supply. So their wool is considered less fine versus a wool breed. Like they put their protein into their hair, so they produce less milk.
Okay. Okay. Well, why choose sheep for milk? I mean, you can go cows or goats. You didn't really like goats. I get that. But what made you go with sheep for the milk? Is there an advantage to sheep milk that you prefer? Is there something about it you like better?
Yeah. So I'd eaten the sheep milk cheese overseas in Romania. And I really liked the taste. It was sweeter. It was nuttier. It was creamier. And we had switched to raw milk several years ago. You know, organic, A2A2, Jersey, you know, all the buzzwords. Mm-hmm. And that did address some health issues while our cow herd share dried up. And we had to switch to a goat herd share just to get raw milk at that time. And we just noticed on the goat milk, we had more health issues clear up on the goat milk. The problem was there was no butter fat in that goat milk. Like it felt like we were drinking skim milk. Now I know some people are like, well, you just get some Nigerian dwarf milk and add it into the larger breed of goat milk, but we didn't have any at the time. We didn't have access to that time. So it was just really, really thin, kind of watery milk compared to the Jersey milk we were used to. And we just wanted more of that fat content for taste preferences. Mm-hmm. And you know, once goat milk gets older, if you don't process it just right, then it just tastes really goaty. And we just didn't enjoy that. So I was looking at the sheep milk mainly for preferences of, you know, taste and texture and that kind of stuff. But then once I started doing research for the book, because people kept asking me like, okay, well, what's the difference besides taste? What's the difference between besides fat content? Like, is there a difference? Like, there's gotta be, because they're two different species. And so I started doing some homework on it, and there's actually some like molecular differences between goat milk and sheep milk and cow milk. And sheep milk actually ends up being the most healthier of the three milks. Okay. It just has a much higher mineral content, a much higher fat content, much higher protein content. The B vitamin content is out the wazoo. So, I mean, if you look at it from a nutritional profile, it actually is a really healing food.
Okay. Yeah. Comparably, how much milk do you get out of a sheep compared to a goat? Is it pretty close to a goat? About the same, maybe?
Well, it depends on the breed, because I know some goats you can get a gallon a day.
Yeah, I'm talking about the dairy breeds, you know, like a Nigerian or something. Yeah. Right. Well, how much do you get out of a sheep?
So with the East Friesian, who's been really, really, really selectively bred for milk production, and you've got them on corn and soy, an East Friesian can give a gallon a day.
Okay.
And you really got to baby those. I personally don't want all the high maintenance of babying them to get that much. So I get more like a quart a day, mm-hmm. but I'm not feeding mine any corn and soy just because I can't digest it.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So if you had a small flock, you could have a decent amount of milk every day then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you had, I know some people, they have like two or three East Friesians, and I mean that's all the milk that they need for their family.
Sure.
With just,
oh, that's, yeah, what is the maintenance like on these though? I mean, it's got to be higher than a goat. I mean, it just with all the hair.
Well, yeah, I mean, shearing intimidates quite a few people, which it just makes me sad, because I love wool. Like, I love wearing it, I love working with it. So you do have to shear the sheep, which it's not as hard as people think. I mean, I've literally just grabbed some kitchen shears and thrown my sheep in the milking stanchion and just started snipping. I mean, it didn't look wonderful, but the hair was off the sheep, or the wool was off the sheep, and I could spin it, and that's really all I cared about at the time. So I mean, yeah, you have to shear them at least once a year. You don't have to do that with goats. The sheep are actually more parasite resistant than goats are. So I mean, goat herders will tell you they're constantly battling, you know, barber pole worm or other parasite issues, and you do have that with sheep. I mean, definitely more than you do with cows, but it's not as bad as with goats. So goats tend to want more browse in their diet, you know, like the leafy woody stuff, than mm-hmm. sheep do. Sheep can't do quite a bit more pasture than goats can. So it kind of makes some people raise their eyebrows, because they're like, well, are your sheep 100% grass fed? And I'm like, okay, well, cows are supposed to be 100% grass fed. Sheep do need some leaves and twigs and other things besides just grass. So no, they're not 100% grass fed. But yeah, so you've got the wool, you've got parasite management. You know, lambing is notorious for being high maintenance as well, which I just made sure to get really healthy stock. Like I got sheep that I asked the previous owners, you know, how much help did they need during lambing? What were any issues you had? And from my experience, if you've got sheep with good genetics and you're giving them the nutrition they need, lambing isn't the nightmare it's purported to be.
Okay. I remember watching, it's one of them BBC shows. I think it was like the Victorian Farm or something like that. And they were lambing sheep on there, and that looked like, it looked like they needed a lot of help. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, I know. I've got a friend in Scotland, and every lambing, I mean, she's got, I think 1500 sheep though. She's got quite a few more than I do, but yeah, every year she's up to her elbows inside a sheep pulling lambs out. And I'm like, cool. Not seem super fun to me. Like I said, I don't do that with my girls, but then I was really particular about the mothering genetics that I got. And the other thing is, I do not breed my ewes their first year.
Okay.
Sheep take 2 years to mature. And you know, it's if you want to start a fight amongst shepherds, ask if you wait 1 or 2 years to breed your sheep. I mean, I don't particularly care what you decide to do on your farm, but for me, I wait 2 years to breed them. And that makes sure the ewe is fully grown. So it's easier for her to lamb and you don't have as many lambing problems.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, so they're not as prone to parasites and things. I mean, it doesn't sound like the maintenance is, you know, I mean, obviously it's probably a little more work than a goat. I mean, goats are kind of independent and doing their own thing out there, you know, but cows, I think, require quite a bit too, you know. It sounds like a good choice for folks that could get the dual benefits of the wool and the milk.
Yeah. I mean, you know, wool's such an undervalued product right now in our culture, especially with the invention of synthetic fabrics. But to be honest, since we switched to wool outerwear in the winter, we get sick less because wool has antimicrobial and antiviral properties. It wicks away your moisture. So if you're outside and you're, you know, loading feed sacks and get all sweaty, you don't tend to get overheated and chilled like you do with synthetic fabrics because the wool wicks the moisture away and it evaporates. So, you know, if nothing else, if you have wool sheep and you shear them and you don't know what to do with the wool, if you mulch your garden with the wool, they're doing studies right now on how much healthier plants are when they're mulched with wool. I have a friend in New Mexico who's able to grow tender plants that don't grow there because she mulches with wool. And it keeps the moisture in. And conversely, my friend in Scotland can grow plants that typically won't grow that far north because of the cold, and it's mulched with wool and it's just fine.
Yeah, I've heard of folks breaking it down in compost and makes a good compost additive too. Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Now you're down in Kentucky. So, I mean, you have the weather fluctuation. I mean, how do sheep handle the temperatures? I mean, cold, hot. I mean, I would think they handle the cold better than the heat, but I don't know that for a fact. How do they do?
So they handle cold very well. They handle wet very well. They just can't do cold, wet, and windy. So, I mean, we have three-sided shelters that we move with their paddocks that they can go into if they want to get out of the weather. Again, like from where I've owned goats before, goats seem to think they're so sweet. If they get wet, they'll just melt. sheep don't have that problem. In fact, some days I'm like, I wish you'd get out of the weather. You look terrible. But they do, like, I have some Icelandic genes in my flock, and the Icelandic girls kind of struggle when it's super hot, like the dog days of summer. Then the Icelandic girls tend to, I mean, they pant, they try to find shade. They kind of seem to struggle. Their milk production goes down a little bit. But that's, you know, that's, I feel beaten down in summer at that point too. Yeah. So, you know, if you shear them in the spring, they tend to do pretty well in the summer. Again, if you're getting hardier breeds. So like I said, I've gotten more heritage breeds in my flock, or I was particular about, genetics that could withstand some stress. But for the most part, I mean, the weather is not what will cause you problems in your flock.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious. I mean, I know every animal has their, you know, their level of hardiness. And I figured sheep have some things they struggle with and some things they don't. And is there anything that they're extremely, that notably well adapted to, or things that, you know, that you really have to caution against with sheep?
I mean, the main thing that is a struggle for shepherds is parasites. Like, that's, if you go onto the forums and online sites for shepherds to talk, that's the main thing that everyone's going to be chatting about is parasites. Now you can manage them a couple different ways. Of course, there's rotational grazing, there's supplemental feed of, you know, herbs, or you can worm them, that kind of thing. But I mean, if you're going to own sheep, you need to do your homework on parasites, because you're going to have them at some point, and you will lose animals if you don't know to be aware to check them and stuff. But as far as what they're really well adapted to, I mean, like in Kentucky, I think it's like Tennessee. I mean, we've got pretty much everything except ocean and desert here. Like, we've got mountains, we've got plains, we've got forests, we've got, you know, all kinds of different topographies, and they can thrive in pretty much any of those. If, you know, you make sure they've got water and food and stuff. So, you know, sheep have historically been used to improve pastures. They'll eat things that cows don't. So, and they're smaller, they're easier for you know, I'm 5'6", so I feel very comfortable walking into a whole group of them versus when we went to go get our jersey, there was a whole, you know, herd of cows. And I was like, I could die real easy right now.
Smaller animals are a lot less prone to hurt you. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one thing I hear in kind of opposition to sheep that I've heard a few times from people is fly strike. Is that something you've had an issue with or had issues with, or is that really a big problem that it was just get blown out of proportion, or how's that go?
You know, I have not had an issue with fly strike. I don't know if I'm just lucky or if I'm in the wrong part of the world. I know in the shepherds that I follow in Australia and the UK, they really have an issue with it. Mm-hmm. So fly strike is basically where flesh-eating flies will lay their eggs on the sheep's skin and the maggots start essentially eating the sheep alive, which is really disgusting. I haven't had an issue with that. I have a multi-species farm. So, I mean, I've got chickens running everywhere. I don't see a lot of ticks on my sheep either. I do know if you have a sheep who is healthier, so their skin is healthier, like they're not, their poop is the way it should be. It's not all clumpy and moist and, you know, making a nasty swampy environment, you know, then you're less prone to it. But I haven't had any experience with that. So Lord willing, I won't.
maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe it's just, it is for some, I think when it happens, it's probably so bad to deal with that it just makes such an impact that people just want to talk about it. You know, maybe.
It's very memorable. Kind of sheep with fly strike. It is. You'd never forget that. Now I will say my flock, I have 20 sheep. We're on 8.5 acres. So, I mean, I'm looking at my flock on a daily basis. So if you're, you know, with my friends on rangeland in Australia and in Scotland, I mean, where they have hundreds, if not thousands of sheep, I think it's also statistically more likely for them to have an issue just because they have a large population, but also, you know, they're not looking at every sheep every single day to see if there's an issue just because, you know, they're covering more land, they've got more sheep. So, you know, if I saw something weird with my sheep's skin, I'm going to catch it within a few days and I'm going to take care of it versus if they're out grazing on the moors or whatever, like if they come in, there could be a problem that started weeks ago and I could just now find out about it. So that's another part of it too.
Yeah. I think that's like that with I think it's an advantage, small homesteaders, you know, put folks with just a variety of animals, but not a herd or a gigantic flock of things. When you can get out there every day and you can pay attention to your animals and you can see what's happening, things don't get out of hand. Even if something does happen, you're able to get on it really quick and take care of it. And I think that is an advantage homesteaders have over large farms that, you know, we're able to get our hands on them every day and really look at things. And, you know, on any animal you have, I think that's an issue. I mean, I have rabbits and, you know, if you're not looking at them every day, ear mites or something can take over and you can, you know, have a big problem with that, you know, just anything like that. It can get out of blown out of proportion if you let it get, if you're not keeping an eye out for it.
Yeah. And I think that's a good delineation too, is if, you know, there's a difference between a farmer who's got, you know, they're focused on producing larger amounts for a larger group of people versus a homesteader that's focused on producing smaller amounts for a smaller group of people, mainly themselves. You can get away with and do more almost when it's on a smaller scale, just because you can put your hands on things more consistently versus if it's, you know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend Joel Salatin raise dairy sheep just because he's trying to produce so much for so many people.
Right.
It's different than if it's, you know, my Mennonite friends who've got a small herd of dairy sheep, they're trying to produce artisanal cheese for like 2 stores. So
big difference. Yeah.
It's just different. It's not, no one's not better than the other. They're just different. So. Right.
Absolutely. Well, now we've pointed out one, you know, big advantage. I think it's probably an advantage. You tell me if I'm wrong, is that one of the things that goats are notorious for is getting out. I know I was raised with goats. We had goats and it seems like we was always chasing them things down. Problem at all? Is that a problem at all with sheep?
Okay. So I have had sheep escape their fence for 3 reasons. The one is that we were busy and we hadn't moved their paddock. So they decided to become free range sheep because they just wanted food. So once we moved the paddock, gave them fresh grass, they did not challenge the fence. The other reason I've had a sheep escape a fence is because she was in heat and she wanted a man now. She went and found one. So she did not think my breeding plan was good enough for her. Thank you. And then the other reason a sheep escaped was she was a new ewe. We were trying to do the, you know, the right thing and quarantine her for biosecurity reasons and blah, blah, blah. And she said that was not necessary. She was not a biohazard. And she jumped the fence and made it to the rest of the flock. And after that, she was fine. So they, you know, as long as they're not hungry, lonely, or in heat, they don't really challenge the fences at all.
Yeah. So you don't need much of a fence necessarily to keep them in. But I'm sure even if I'm sure if you had like a goat can get out of a decent fence, a sheep probably couldn't, I would guess.
No, I mean, I will say like I have two kinds of sheep. I have dairy breed sheep, and then I have a critically endangered heritage breed called Gulf Coast Native. And we joke the Gulf Coast Natives do kind of think they're goats. So they tend to climb a little bit more than the other sheep don't climb, you know, they might stand on their back legs sometimes in the Gulf Coast. I mean, they'll open trash cans, they'll open latches, they'll kind of climb over pallets if they feel like they need to. So they kind of remind me how blessed I am that sheep are not goats when they feel it. Life interesting, but you know, if that's more the feral breeds where they just have that survival creative instinct still so intact. The dairy ewes who have been genetically bred to be friendly and content and happy and stay where they're put, typically don't do that unless
they like their hooves on the ground, huh?
Yeah, they like their hooves on the ground. They like to be spoiled. They know what makes mom mad. So when mom's happy, they get treats. So that's what they're focused on.
Well, they can be trained. All right. That's good information to have then.
Yeah.
Well, good. Yeah. Well, I mean, that sounds like sheep are great. It sounds like they're great for you. I mean, it sounds like they'd be great for a lot of people. Who should maybe get a sheep on their homestead? Who would be a good fit for?
So we got into the sheep for taste, but people with food sensitivities, I have a friend in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and she got her dairy sheep because she couldn't digest any milk products. She couldn't do goat milk. She couldn't do cow milk. She couldn't do anything, but she could do the sheep milk. So there's a lot of nutritional, you know, chemistry reasons why sheep milk can be digested by a lot more people who can't do the cow and goat milk. So that would be the first person, is someone who wants dairy but can't do typical dairy. You know, someone who wants just like a nice small amount of milk for cheese making, you know, because sheep don't lactate year round like a cow or a goat will. They only lactate for 6 to 8 months. So you do kind of get a breather for a few months if you want it. You know, so someone who just wants to make Manchego cheese, for example, you know, have one or two or have a couple of sheep just to make a small amount of artisanal cheese, that would be a good person for sheep. Kids are really good shepherds. You know, and the ewes are really kid friendly and docile. And then there's the whole mutton busting dynamic that comes into play. So, yeah. You know, but I think everyone should have sheep, but I know that some people don't.
Yeah, probably. I'm assuming there's some people it wouldn't be a good fit for, but yeah, it sounds like they are. Great. Yeah.
I mean, I will take that back. There's a couple people who have tried sheep, and I'm like, nah, I think cows are your speed. I don't think you need sheep just because they do kind of, I mean, you have to kind of turn into a shepherd in order to have sheep. And by that, I mean, like you have, you know, I will sometimes fall asleep thinking about issues in my flock. I'll wake up, you know, you have to kind of embrace some sleeplessness sometimes because the flock will need you. You know, they're not a set it and forget it livestock.
Okay.
So, you have to be hands-on. You have to kind of be empathetic. So, I mean, you know, not that they're running your life, but you do have to be docile to their needs. So, you know, if you want to have a really strict schedule in which nothing changes what you want to do for tonight, maybe don't do sheep because they do require last minute plans changing. If you know you comes up with some kind of issue, you need to stay and take care of her, because if you don't, the flock kind of pays attention to that. Like they know who loves them and cares for them. The studies that I was researching said that the flock will actually see the shepherd as the head sheep. They don't consider you a different species. They consider you the head sheep. So, which I just thought was really interesting. Like they do kind of a relationship and a trust with their shepherd.
Yeah. I mean, we just read stories throughout history of the shepherds being, you know, night and day with the sheep, you know, and taking care of them and then just watching over them, and they trust them and they go with them. And yeah, it's just, it's, you know, historically that is the way it's been. And I think like you mentioned earlier, it's just kind of been bred into them over the, you know, the centuries, that it's just kind of how they function.
Yeah. And in medieval era, they actually buried shepherds with a tuft of wool in their hand as a symbol to the community that this was a shepherd. So they were excused from attending church they were excused from the same standards as everyone else was because they were shepherds, and everyone just knew if they don't show up to church, there's a reason for it.
They have a job to do.
Yeah, exactly. And which I've tried to explain that to my pastor during lambing season. He's like, no, we're not doing that. I'm like, okay.
Well, I think a lot of animals, you know, will require, you know, they'll all surprise you. I mean, there's going to be a time when a fence goes down, you know, you're going to need to repair a fence, or, you know, something's going to break, or you're just going to have to tend. It's just homestead life, really. I mean, there's just times like that, but animals, you know, all animals, but it sounds like sheep definitely, like you said, through lambing season, and there's special times where they probably do need a little bit more hands on them than some other livestock you might have.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, like we have pigs and we have a cow and that kind of stuff. And it's just kind of interesting. Like the cow doesn't look me in the eye when someone she doesn't know walks on the farm. you know, like the pigs aren't looking to me for reassurance if they hear a dog barking. So, I mean, like, all animals need stewarded, and they need, you know, cared for, and they need their nature respected. But the sheep and the shepherd do have just a different. If you're like, no, I'm just gonna, you know, do what the book says and then not really get emotionally involved, it's like, well, maybe don't do sheep, because they are the most delightful, wonderfully fulfilling heartbreak you're ever gonna have. So
I guess I should ask you this earlier about when it comes to milking them, but like, you obviously you have to breed them and then they start producing milk.
Right.
And how long will they generally go in producing milk?
Between 6 and 8 months. If you go to Europe, you can get some that are like 10 to 12 months, but mm-hmm. I don't think we have those genetics in the States at this point.
Okay. So you're maybe breeding them once a year? And
yes. So you typically breed them in the fall. They do spring lambing, and then you milk through the spring, summer, typically dry off around fall, and then restart the process.
Okay. Interesting. So you're producing a lot of lambs. What do you do with those? Are you just expanding your herd, or are you?
Well, we were expanding for a minute. We were planning on eating them, but I actually have sold most of them. I mean, if we want to eat a show, if we want lamb meat, we kind of have to hide them in a corner and reserve them for us, because we're selling breeding stock well right now, because dairy sheep more popular, and there's of course the whole homesteading tsunami that's, you know, been taking place the last 3 years. So we butchered one this spring, and we were gonna butcher a ram lamb, but then someone came over and was like, no, I want to buy him. We're like, well, okay, I guess we're not gonna eat him then. So
you're asking folks not to reach out to you to buy any lambs, because you want some of the, you want to be able to eat some. What you're saying.
Right.
Okay. Gotcha. I was curious about that. Yeah.
Well, the other thing, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was just curious about that, because I didn't know if you were eating them. I didn't know if you were selling them. I didn't know if you had a business that you were just in the business of, you know, creating new flocks for other homesteaders. I know some folks go that route.
Yeah. I mean, emotionally, it's easier to sell the lambs to other people wanting to get started, just because the dairy sheep especially are just so dang friendly. It's like, oh, could you just be more hateful, please, so I can eat you? But I will say, I mean, people say that they want hair sheep because they don't like the flavor of a wool sheep. And I found the opposite to be true. I would like a wool breed lamb chop any day of the week before a Cattard and a Dorper lamb chop.
Really?
So, I mean, the meat is really good. The Gulf Coast native lamb meat is on the arc of taste. But again, I wouldn't know because people keep buying my lambs.
I really love that this is basically it's a triple purpose animal. I mean, it can provide meat. It provides the wool. It can provide milk. That's really neat. I mean, as a permaculture person, I love this, you know, function stacking, this multiple purposes. I mean, I think that makes for a great animal for the homestead.
Yeah. And, I mean, their manure is cold. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you can put it directly on your garden and get some nicer tomatoes before. Yeah.
Yeah. And even just like pasture management, they probably work really well for that, for the paddocks and just keeping the land really healthy and moving them around and getting their manure on the ground. And then what you can maybe even add to a garden or compost, that's even better. So, yeah, I think that they have multiple purposes. They sound like a great animal, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with small acreages where you really need all the bang for your buck that you can get. Like I have some friends in Florida, they have 1 acre and they have dairy sheep.
Okay, that was going to be my next question. Like what kind of acres do we need for you know, say a couple of them, what do they require? Just an acre less?
Yeah, I think it's the formula is 4 sheep to an acre.
Really? Wow. I mean,
it depends on, you know, obviously your acre, like what's on it and how's your food situation. But ballpark is 4 sheep to an acre. So, I mean, if you just had 1 acre, you could feasibly have 2 ewes and a ram and a castrated ram, which is called a wether, because the rams do still need some companionship. So, but I mean, you could very feasibly have a small dairy herd and then you would just butcher or sell off the lambs each year if you had an acre.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of homesteaders in that boat there that are probably listening to this and they're going to be like, okay, that's exactly, you know, what I have. And that sounds like that'd be a great animal because it's not enough room pasture for a cow. And, you know, maybe they just don't want the headache of dealing with goats. It sounds like the sheep would just be the perfect animal in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, like my friends in Florida, like they're not technically in agricultural land. They're technically zoned in residential. It's just Florida, so it's weird. So, you know, everyone's got like
sorry,
really
folks
big
from Florida.
Yard.
We didn't mean that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, I love Florida. Don't get me wrong. I go there every year for vacation. Y'all are great, but your zoning's weird. So, but yeah, I mean, it's all palmetto. So their sheep cleared out all the palmetto shrub for them. And so now they've got this really beautiful garden area and stuff. And the sheep, are very happy in their little corrals. Now they do have to bring in during their off season just because they don't they don't have the pasture that sheep prefer when they are lactating and gestating. If you wanted sheep on less than an acre or less, you would probably need to still import some feed in the form of hay or, you know, alfalfa or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it sounds like, it sounds like the care for them, even if you had small pasture, but the input of what you'd have to bring in could be pretty low as far as what they would require. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would love to hear about the book you wrote. I'm sorry. Yeah. We are jumping over each other back and forth. We got a little bit of lag, don't we?
I'm sorry. Yeah. We just a little bit of lag, but yeah, we can talk about the book for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You wrote this book, the Guide to Homestead Dairy Sheep. Actually, we're recording this a couple weeks before it comes out. So actually I think this is just going to come out. You can actually pre-order it, but I think this episode's coming out the day before it can be shipped. So that'll be awesome. So you hear this, folks will be able to order it and it'll be sending out right away pretty much. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what made you decide to write a book?
Yeah. So, it was actually kind of funny because, it was Homesteaders of America's fault and Beth Daugherty's fault and some random person at Homesteaders of America's fault. So we had a booth at Homesteaders of America and, we saw Beth Daugherty's little pamphlets on dairy cows. And there is no literature right now on the market that's in print for dairy sheep. And there's just not a lot for sheep in general. And being a millennial, you know, I hashtag be the change you want to see. So I was like, well, maybe I should just write something small on dairy sheep, like just something really quick, easy over a weekend, whatever. And a friend of mine at Homesteaders of America was giving a workshop on having wool sheep on the homestead. And during the question and answer time, people kept asking her about dairy with the sheep. And she was like, well, I'm sorry, I don't do dairy with my sheep. I can't really speak to that. And they just kept asking her. So finally she looks at me and I look at her and I nod and she goes, okay, go talk to that lady right there. And I have people the rest of the weekend coming and asking me about sheep dairying. And I had no idea this was such a hot topic. I mean, I just thought I was that weirdo in Kentucky who'd been to Europe who milked her sheep. I didn't know it was like, you know, this new interest that was hitting the homesteading world. And so I was answering these questions and, you know, people were like, okay, well, where do we get more of your information? And I was like, well, go follow me on Instagram. I don't know. I didn't know I had information to offer. And finally, this one guy comes and he's asking me question after question after question. And I'm trying to answer him as best I can. And he finally just yells at me, where's your book? Where's your class? Where's your pamphlet? I need your information. And he just kind of stomps off. And I look at my husband, I'm like, well, shoot, like, should I write a book? And he's like, well, maybe you should, but like, how are we gonna distribute it? And like, do we self-publish? Do we, like, what do we do? And Janet Garman overheard us and said, well, I have the answer to that. I'm starting a publishing company. So, you know, we talked back and forth quite a bit and, you know, she got the publishing contract all put together and everything like that. So, it was just kind of right place, right time. Everything kind of fell into place. Yeah. And I found out I was pregnant and was like, oh, I guess I'm writing a book and having a baby all in the same year. Cause I'm an overachiever. Kids, do not try this at home, but it worked out. So we're very thankful.
Yeah. Sounds like it's a perfect reason to write a book. I mean, there's a need for it. That's why you wrote the book.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I reached out to lots of my shepherding friends from the Homestead Dairy Sheep forums, and they were all just overjoyed that someone was finally writing a book on dairy sheep. So, they were very generous with, you know, sharing how they, and I was actually able to find some really cool research on, you know, the health benefits and nutrition of sheep milk. It was just really cool how it just all kind of came to place. Like I really wanted to find information on the Romanian shepherds since I had lived there and tried their cheese, but they're really remote. So like it's incredibly hard to contact them or get interviews or whatever. And I reached out to a photographer and he wrote back and was like, oh yeah, actually one of my best friends is a Romanian shepherd. I'll just get you some pictures and an interview real fast. And I was like, oh, cool, wow. Okay. Yeah. So it just was really cool how, you know, things just kept lining up. And I was like, all right, well, Jesus apparently really likes shepherds and sheep milk and wants this to happen because there's no way I could have pulled this off otherwise.
Well, it sounds like it. Yeah. It sounds like it wasn't a needed piece of content for, you know, for homesteaders, because it sounds like there is a lot of interest in it. And honestly, like you said, there's just nothing really out there. I mean, I've been doing this podcast for, I think, almost 8 years now, and something we've never even talked about, you know, because it's just like people just aren't doing it. But it sounds like a lot of people are wanting to do it. And maybe there are people doing it that we just, you know, they're kind of quiet and they're not writing books like you. So now we're going to have a resource for it.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Like when I first started homesteading, I wrote out this like profile of each animal species and the people who raise them. So like goat herders are always fun, always looking for adventure, you know, fine with chaos. Beekeepers, like, never agree. They're always, you know, kind of hot tempered. If you say something about raising bees, like, they're always going to be ready for a debate over it. You know, cow herders were just very reassured, kind of immovable, stoic people. And shepherds were really quiet and didn't say a lot and didn't really trust you. And you don't really know that they're there. Which, you know, not insulting anyone from any of those people, those animal raising groups, because I love all of you. but it was just funny when I was trying to learn about sheep, I'd ask questions of shepherds and I would, you know, send out these messages and make posts and ask questions and no one would say anything. And I was like, y'all are rude. What is going on? But then once they decided I was okay, then it was all fine. We were all best friends. And I joke with my one friend with shepherds. It's, if you make friends with a shepherd, it's either your family and best friends for life, or you never speak to each other again. Like, there is no middle ground.
Sounds like sheep are the perfect animal for introvert homesteaders, people who just kind of look to themselves and, you know, answer life questions. It sounds perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what happened with me though, because I'm not an introvert. So I don't know if you,
yeah, you don't sound like it. but all your friends were. That's why they weren't wanting to talk about it.
Right. My husband is, though. Kyle's definitely an introvert. So,
well, I definitely want to point people to the book. It sounds like it's just going to be a well, you know, needed and a great resource for anybody interested in dairy sheep. And even if folks just think they might be wanting to go down that route, sounds like they should maybe get the book and, you know, and see if it, just read about it, maybe see if it's the animal that they're wanting to pursue. And it might just convince them that it is. And I think if this podcast didn't do it, because honestly, if I had the room for it, it sounds like it'd be a great animal for me, because I mean, I loved everything I heard about them, really. And I've had goats in the past, and they have their benefits. I mean, no doubt about it. But yeah, there are some definite challenges there that it sounds like sheep don't have as big of a problem with. And right. Yeah, I think they sound like a great animal, and it sounds like more homesteaders should definitely be doing, you know, raising dairy sheep.
I think so.
Yeah, you're doing some great stuff there. Sounds like you got a lot of other things going on as well. I seen you talked about chickens and bees and just a lot of other things you're doing. And so it sounds like you're pretty busy on the homestead.
Oh yes, we're never bored. We kind of sometimes pine for the days in which we were bored. So
yeah, the homesteading life is not the boring life. Yeah.
No, it's not. But that's okay. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right. Well, I think unless you have anything else you want to add, I definitely want to point folks to your website, whoopsiedaisyfarm.com. That's an interesting name.
I know. We didn't think we were doing anything special with it, but that's been a very popular farm name.
Yeah, I like it.
So I'm glad we stumbled.
Yeah, well, I'll have that in the show notes. We'll have the link to your, like I said, they'll be able to pre-order it, or it'll be really close to it coming out. So they'll probably be able to get it right away as soon as they order it. Once the podcast episode comes out. And yeah, unless you have anything else you'd want to add, we'll wrap up. Is there anything else you want to throw in there?
I would just say, if you are interested in milking sheep, go for it. Even if you have hair sheep, I spoke to several shepherds who milk hair breed sheep. So if you've got Dorpers or St. Croix or Katahdin and you want to try sheep milk, I'd say definitely go for it. Sheep have a reputation for being stupid and stubborn. And while they can be stubborn, they definitely are not stupid. So if you want to train them to be milked, you definitely can.
That's great advice. And it sounds like, you know, folks, maybe just jump in. You know, I think with most animals, you learn, you get a book, you watch some YouTube videos, you talk to a couple people, and then you just go for it. I mean, the best way to learn is just get started. And, you know, it's like maybe sometimes, you know, especially with livestock, it's a little risky. It's nice to have people you can call on and ask questions or have some resources at your fingertips. But also, when you put things off, and you'll never learn everything by just reading books and, you know, talking. You have to just engage and get in there and do it. And yeah, so my advice is to all people, just always just, if you're thinking about something and you want to do it, you know, do a little bit upfront research, but then just get after it and do it.
True. Cause the animals don't read the books.
No, they'll do different things. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Rachel, it's great having you on, and I think you brought some great information. Like I said, it's a subject never talked about, I don't think, on this podcast before. So I was excited to talk to you about it when you reached out to me, because I think it was something that was, yeah, I wanted folks to hear about it and get your book. And like you said, there's not any other resources you could find out there that are available on dairy sheep. So I think it'll be helpful for folks who are interested in that.
And trust me, special ordered a book from India on dairy sheep just because there wasn't anything else available. So,
Now you've probably inspired a whole bunch of dairy sheep farmers out there to want to put some material out. Now there'll probably be a whole bunch of books available.
That's fine with me, because I love reading. So
yeah, me too. I have a nice little library of homesteading material all around me right now, and I can't get enough. So I'm always reading something new, even if it's something I'm not doing or don't think I'll ever do. I just love to read about it and learn about it and be able to talk about it with folks, you know, because I just think that's fascinating. So yeah, great stuff, Rachel. I appreciate you coming on, talking to us today, and I'll definitely point folks to your book and to your website. So appreciate it.
Well, Well, thank you so much for having me.